This week, September 15th, 2015, on The Digital Story, the Sony Alpha 7S II. Hands-on with the Olympus OMD EM10 Mark II. Custom white balance. The Rocky Nook Evangelist Program. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I am back from my trip to Laughlin, Nevada, where I shot a wedding. A couple of long days there, a few long days. 10 hours from Santa Rosa down there. There's no easy way to get there. So that was my Friday, 10 hours driving down there, and then the rehearsal. My Saturday was shooting the wedding into the evening. And then my Sunday was driving back through the desert so I could be here in the studio for you to do this podcast. Well, I had a couple other things I had to do too back here. In fact, it's been really, really busy. But I'm thrilled to be here because I have so many good topics for you today. We're going to talk about the new Sony mirrorless camera. I'm going to do a hands-on with the EM10 Mark II, which I took with me on the trip through the desert to Nevada, to the Colorado River. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about custom white balance. It's one of those techniques that won't go away because just when I think I don't need it anymore, the technology changes and suddenly I do. So I thought, well, we should do a little refresher on that. And then I have more. I have more. So I'm going to get to it right now. No more fooling around. The weekly update. The Miticon Speedmaster 25mm f0.95 lens. This is from the actual site of the manufacturer. But I read about it on a number of sites, but I'm going with this source, and you'll find out why near the end of this little report here. An ultra-fast prime lens that provides a 35mm equivalent focal length of 50mm for the Micro Four Thirds system. A maximum aperture of 0.95 makes it perfect for low-light conditions without flash. The lens weighs 0.51 pounds and is 2.5 inches long. Despite the light weight, the optic incorporates 11 elements in 9 groups, including 1 extra low dispersion element, 4 extra high refractive index elements, and 2 high refractive index elements. It also has 11 aperture blades. So this is quite a lens. I mean, when I first saw the report on it, I was pretty excited. They're doing this really fast lens, 0.95. I mean, that's fast for maximum aperture. For $395 US, and it's not huge. It's only 2.5 inches long, which for this type of lens is very nice, and it only weighs 0.5 pound. So I was going, this is really cool. Now, you don't get auto-focusing, so it's manual focus. But the lens should work very nice on both Olympus and Panasonic cameras. Now, the reason why I'm going with this source instead of the other news sources that I initially read was because they put a footnote here that the manufacturer warns that this optic is not compatible with a few cameras. I'm going to give them to you right now. The Olympus EPL6, EPL5, EPM2, and the OMD EM5 Mark I, the first version. Now, they say that it does work with the OMD EM5 Mark II, and they spelled that out specifically. I had not seen that caveat anywhere else. So if you're excited about this lens, which I actually am, I'm seriously thinking about getting it, you can pre-order it now. I put a link to the manufacturer's site. You can pre-order it now. They have free shipping, and they're going to start selling it, they said, in late October. It sounds like a very fun optic for Micro Four Thirds shooters, and I can think of a lot of situations. This wedding that I was just doing, you know, you get stuck not being able to use flash so much because the officiant doesn't want it, or you know, whatever the conditions are, that having something this fast would be really nice, especially for the ceremony. I'll let you know if I go for it. If you go for it, I have the link to the site there in the show notes. And I tell you, $395, it is awfully tempting. In other news, the Sony Alpha 7S II records 4K internally and shoots up to ISO 409,600. DP Review reports, Sony has introduced the Alpha 7S II, a second iteration of its video-centric Alpha 7S. The A7S II adds a wealth of videography features, including the ability to record 4K footage internally with full pixel readout. Its full-frame 12-megapixel sensor features an expanded ISO range of 50 up to 409,600. Sony's in-body 5-axis image stabilization has also been added, introduced with the Sony A7 II. Wow, these numbers after a while just sort of, you know, melt my mind a bit. A few of the other highlight features include 2.36 million dot XGA OLED True Finder electronic viewfinder. They get a lot of little buzzwords in there, don't they? A 3-inch 1 million dot tilting LCD monitor. It's actually, I think, 1.2. Up to 5 frames per second shooting. And, of course, that wonderful ISO 409,600. Fast, intelligent autofocus, 169 AF points. Built-in Wi-Fi with NFC. Now, the price has gone up $500 from what you can get the first model from. So the current price for the new model is $2,999. That's for the body only, and is scheduled to be released on September 17th, 2015. So this is one of those cameras when the ISO numbers especially start to look like, when they're in the hundreds of thousands, ISO hundreds of thousands, that's really wild. So I was pushing my ISO this weekend up to 3,200. And I was a little nervous about it. The images look great, but I was a little nervous about it going up that high for a paid assignment. If I had this camera, the Sony Alpha 7S II, then I wouldn't even be thinking about 3,200. I wouldn't even be thinking about 6,400. I don't know. It's just, it's a whole different way of thinking about things. It's only a 12 megapixel sensor, so that does eliminate it from certain types of assignment work and commercial work. 12 megapixels, not quite enough resolution for the kind of prints that you usually need for wedding assignments and so forth. But it is interesting, and it's funny how, you know, when we read these reports, we just throw these gigantic numbers out. And then when you stop and think about it, this is just a wild, wild time that we're in right now. Anyway, if you have plans to get this camera and you actually do it, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you think, and I'd love to see some of the images. And that is this week's Weekly Update. Story number one, custom white balance. So I'm bringing up the story, as I mentioned at the top of the show, because custom white balance is one of those techniques, features, that I keep thinking, well, because of raw and non-destructive workflow and everything, you know, I don't really need to worry about absolutely accurate color when I'm shooting. And then as soon as I start thinking that, a situation comes up where I need to capture in very accurate color. One of my traditional situations is when I'm doing a portrait session, and I like to show the subject a picture or two early in the session so that he or she really gains confidence in the shoot. And I always feel like it leads to better pictures as we go on. So I do like accurate color then. So what they see on the LCD you know, is pleasing to their eyes. So that's one scenario. And then another scenario now, which is really bleeding into all sorts of assignments that I'm doing, which is where I'm streaming images from the camera to my iPad for either client review during the photo shoot, or in the case of this weekend, the wedding, where they're actually going up to a website in semi-real time as I'm working. People already have the URL so they can, you know, see the images, so they can, during the reception, when things slow down a little bit, they can pull out their mobile phone, they can go to this URL, and they can look at pictures from the ceremony and even some of the reception shots, depending on when they check in. So again, I need accurate color for that. And that is usually really tricky color. You know, usually at the portrait shoot, I'm outside or I'm in the studio, so it's much easier to control the lighting. When I'm shooting an event, oh my gosh, I mean, the lighting is all over the map and it's usually mixed lighting. So I have to kind of figure out, okay, what am I going to balance for? What's most important? Now, in the case of this last weekend, as you can imagine, in the reception hall, the color balance was super warm if you leave it on auto because of all the artificial lighting. Way too warm for, you know, what I considered acceptable results. So what I did was, before all the events started, is that I went into the different areas where I knew I was going to have to shoot existing light, and I set up custom white balance presets for those areas. And I ended up using three presets. So I had one custom white balance preset for the ceremony where I knew I was going to have to shoot existing light, because the officiants usually don't let you use flash during the ceremony. My custom white balance preset one was for the ceremony. My second preset was for the general area of the reception, where they had, you know, some oddball lighting there. So I did a custom white balance there. And then for the group shots, I knew that I was going to have to do them indoors because the reception was at night. And so what I did was I did a custom white balance preset for the flash and ambient lighting, trying to find kind of a middle spot there that worked. So I had those logged in into all my cameras. I actually had three cameras on the shoot. I only use two, but I keep a third one just in case. And then that way, all I had to do is remember when I'm shooting a ceremony, go to custom white balance setting one, reception, go to two. If I go back to that area for some reason, then I can switch back and forth. And by doing that, I really was able to capture very good color throughout the whole event. You can do this on the spot, but I really recommend with custom white balance that if you can, do it ahead of time, because I don't think the procedure is actually that fast. Now, you can do this with any camera, right? Any DSLR, any mirrorless camera, practically any compact camera. And what it usually involves is that you go to custom white balance setting on the camera, and then you record the light bouncing off a white sheet of paper. That's the most common way that people do it. The camera records that and says, all right, do you want me to use this as a color balance guide? You say yes, you confirm that, and then it sets the adjustment for that lighting. So a videographer's been doing this forever, you know, to get the white balance correct. And then there are other tools like, you know, the Expo Disc and things like that, that you can also use for the custom white balance setting. The thing is, there's a couple things to remember here. One is that this is something you really should practice before the event, because it can be sort of frustrating if you have to do it in a hurry. And, you know, every camera has kind of its own quirks around setting the custom white balance. Second thing, once you set it, once you do that once, then take a few pictures and look at the pictures and make sure they look okay. You know, it doesn't always work perfectly. Maybe the light bouncing off the paper is picking up one of the light sources that is not really the main source or whatever, and you're not getting the reading that you want. So then, you know, you might go to a little different area and try it again. and then do some test shots. So I think the test shots are important so that, you know, theoretically you've done it right, but, you know, it doesn't count unless the pictures look good. And again, that's not something that you want to do in real time. You want to do that ahead of time. And then, of course, you know, the third thing with custom white balance is thinking to change it as you go into the different lighting conditions. So it has to be in your brain. It has to be, okay, I am working with color as well as exposure during the shoot. And you need to be thinking about, just like you change exposure compensation while you're shooting, you also want to change the color as you go from one area to another. The payoff is, of course, if you do this, then the images that are captured in camera will look pretty good. You know, I don't have any trouble with exposure compensation anymore when I'm shooting with my Olympus cameras in particular, because I have the electronic viewfinder. I'm just rotating the exposure compensation dial that is right around the shutter button there, right before every shot, if I'm in, you know, a weird lighting situation, so that when I shoot the shot, I have good exposure. So that part has become much easier thanks to electronic viewfinders, which I actually really do like for events, especially indoor events. The color, of course, if you're not used to changing the color all the time, if you're a photographer, most photographers actually do this, which is they use automatic white balance and then they fix the color in post, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that at all, especially if you're shooting raw, because, you know, there's no destruction there to the file. It's just another step that you have to do. And if you're all in one lighting source, then it's just a batch process in post. So it's actually really easy and not a bad way to go if you don't need to have accurate color at capture for some of the reasons I've talked about earlier. That being said, I think it's a good technique to practice and to be able to do, because I'll tell you, when you need it, you need it. The other systems just don't work as well, trying to guess the right Kelvin or any of that kind of stuff. Using the presets, they come close, but, you know, a lot of times they're not quite right. Like the presets for me and the lighting that I had this weekend were absolutely no good at all. I had to go with custom. I'll tell you, it's a really great feeling to share an image with someone right there on the spot with good exposure and good color. Really makes you look like you know what you're doing. Story number two, hands-on with the OMD EM10 Mark II. So I was lucky that I got the camera last week, the Mark II, and have been shooting with it as much as possible. You know, this is a tall order here, because I really like the Mark I. I really like the EM10, the first one that came out. So I was very curious to see how I felt about the second camera, in part because they made a lot of physical changes to it, and I just didn't know how I was going to feel about it. And that's what this report's about. This report's really about the physical changes to the camera. Now, I've already talked about and written about all the technology changes, and there are a lot of improvements, I'll tell you, with the Mark II under the hood. This is more about the physical experience of the camera. So I have a little list here that I've compiled. I'm just going to go over it with you. If you are considering this camera, either as a first-time purchase, in other words, you haven't bought an OMD before, or if you're thinking about upgrading from the first one, the first EM10. So the first thing they've done, and this is nice, the right side grip, they've redesigned it. It's subtle, the redesign, but it is easier to shoot with it, especially for one-handed shooting, which I do a lot with this camera. One of the things I like about these cameras is that they're light and they're small, and I can reach and do odd shots that I never could do before with a DSLR. So I like what they've done with the right-hand grip, and I suspect that most people will find it more comfortable than the first model. Now, the mode dial has been moved from the left side of the top deck over to the right side. And I really don't see an improvement there. I sort of liked it on the left side, where I would be holding the camera in my right hand and then adjusting, you know, going from aperture to priority to program to whatever, art filters, with my left hand. So I sort of liked it better on the left side. Now I feel like I have to kind of reach over the camera. The reason why they did that was because they wanted to put the on-off switch on the left side. So the on-off switch is now on the top on the left side. Instead of having it on the back of the camera in the lower right corner like they had on the first model. I'm not sure how I feel about this. I didn't mind it on the back of the camera in the lower right corner because, in fact, I could just turn on the camera with my thumb, with my right thumb, in kind of one move and then go right into shooting. Now, this left-hand switch, you've really got to turn it. It's firm. It's a firm switch. And I just felt like in a lot of situations where I use this camera, it was more awkward to me. Now, of course, the argument would be that you would have fewer accidental turning on and off the camera situations. The problem is I never had accidental situations before with the 10 first model. I really don't know about this. To me, I don't see the advantage of taking that on-off switch and putting it on the top left side and instead of the mode dial. I actually preferred the mode dial over there. Something to be aware of as you're thinking about this camera. Now, on the right side, they raised the shutter release button. It's higher, which is actually more comfortable to my finger. I do like it higher. It feels more natural here. But at the same time, by raising the shutter release button, the collar around it is also higher. The click stops aren't quite as firm as they are on my first models, on my Mark I's. And that collar, of course, is the exposure compensation. So what I found was that when I went to reach for it, like pull it out of the bag or something, especially when it was on already, that I was accidentally rotating the exposure compensation. And I'd put it up to my eye and I'd be at, you know, plus one or minus one, you know, depending which way I rotate it. And I was finding I was having more accidental exposure compensation adjustments with the raised shutter button combined with the softer click stops. They weren't as firm as the other one. So for me, for the grab and shoots, I did have some overexposures in particular because of that. Now, once the camera's out and I have it up, I'm not accidentally changing the exposure compensation. It's more when I'm grabbing it and shooting it quickly, especially one-handed, that I was doing that. So that is a give and take. I do like the shutter button higher, but I'm not sure I like the exposure compensation collar higher, and I wish the click stops were a little firmer there. The playback button is moved down to the lower right-hand corner where the power switch used to be. And, you know, that's it's fine there. That's where it is on a lot of cameras. I actually did not mind it up in the top right-hand side on the first model. I did find myself kind of searching for it when I was in the dark a few times, whereas before I just knew it was right up there on that angle on the first model. So I can live with that either way. The battery remains the same size and it has good life. So if you're upgrading from the first model, then you have extra batteries already. And I always like that. Yay. I think overall the looks of the Mark II is more stylish. I think it is a better looking camera, especially straight on, as you're looking at it straight on. It's very handsome, very good looking camera. I read one report. Oh, it was on Luminous Landscape. And he was saying, he was mainly a DSLR shooter. And he was saying that the refresh rate on the electronic viewfinder on this EM10 Mark II was driving him crazy. He just felt that it was too flickery. That surprised me because I've always had good experiences with the electronic viewfinders on Olympus cameras. So I had that in my brain when I was testing it. And actually when the flicker refresh is set to normal, I did notice a difference and I tested it against the first model. I did notice that the frame rate refresh was slower when set to normal with the Mark II than at normal with the Mark I. So what I did on the Mark II was I set the refresh rate to high on the Mark II, and then it seemed fine to me. At first, I was thinking this guy was being too picky, and then, you know, when I tested it, I saw that he had a legitimate beef there. So if you are shooting with the Mark II, if you do get it, I would go ahead and make that change in the menu so the refresh rate is set to high, so you have a smooth experience when you're looking through the electronic viewfinder and panning around. And then the last physical thing that I want to talk about is that the flash pop-up is now part of the power switch. And this is definitely an improvement, because the one accidental thing that I would do with the Mark I is that the flash pop-up switch was right on the left side of the electronic viewfinder. And especially when I went to adjust the diopter or something, I would accidentally hit it all the time. And then the flash would pop up. Or, you know, when I was using the mode dial, sometimes I'd hit it and the flash would pop up. And it's kind of awkward in certain situations. So now having it as an extension of the power switch, that is definitely an improvement. You're not going to accidentally send it up, yet it's right there when you need it. So there's a feel for the new camera, the Mark II. Overall, you know, especially when you compare what's happening under the hood, this is definitely a substantial upgrade, and it's available now. It's shipping right now. I think that these EM10s are great values, whether you buy the first one, which, you know, the sensor is still the same, you know, so basically you could buy the first one at a great price and you're getting what I think is a wonderful camera. But the second one is still a very affordable camera at $649 for body only. And, you know, it is full of some serious technology, very light, compact. It's a terrific camera. You can't miss either way. Although I have to tell you, I'd be very tempted to get the Mark I right now at a great price if I found it. All right, so that is my hands-on of the OMD EM10. Mark II. Let's take a stroll over to the screening room. Today's screening room selection is Lightroom CC Essential Training with Chris Orwick. And this is the 2015 Lightroom CC. Chris is a great photographer and an excellent Lightroom instructor. And he goes through the whole shebang. So if you want to learn Lightroom CC from soup to nuts and know all the stuff that's going on there, this is an excellent title for you. It's live right now in the lynda.com online training library. And if you're not already a member, you can go to the TDS screening room landing page, which is lynda.com, lynda.com/thedigitalstory. Sign up for your 7-day free trial. You can watch all of Chris's movies and every other title that's in there. If you really want to learn that app, Chris Orwick will help you do that. And that is today's screening room selection. I have a fun note here from Rocky Nook, and they're starting an evangelist program. And the idea here is to spread the word about the book titles. And it's a great way to do it. So what they're looking for are people who have some kind of online platform, Twitter, Facebook, a blog. Blogs are great for this sort of thing. Not so much just Instagram, because, you know, what they're looking for are for people who are interested in reading their books and then writing about how they felt about the books. And of course, Instagram, not the best platform for that. But certainly the other socials are, and blogs are ideal for this. And, you know, what do you get? Well, you get 5 free print books a year. You get early access to the ebooks, which is kind of cool. And the reason why they're doing that is because, you know, the ebooks tend to come out before the print versions. So if you get an ebook and you read it and write a review, that review is online and ready for the world when the print version of the book comes out. So that's pretty cool. They have other goodies such as t-shirts and coupons. It's all just part of this evangelist program. Now you have to apply to it. And, you know, again, you need to have some sort of a community. If you're just writing for your mom, you're probably not going to make it. I hate to break that to you. But if you got a few, if you got some people following you, then that's a whole different story. So I put a link to the landing page in the show notes, and it's called the Rocky Nook Evangelist Program, or you can just search on that and go over there. They'll show you all the requirements. They'll show you all the benefits. And there's an online application right there. The reason why I'm bringing this up on the show is because a lot of people who listen to this podcast are the go-to people in their photography communities. You are the influencers. And I just feel like that there are some really great evangelists listening to the show right now who I think would benefit from this. You can build up your photography library. You can have some fun. And, you know, you learn new stuff too, which is what I love about teaching and writing, is that I'm constantly learning new things that I can apply to my work. So if you're interested, check out the show notes, go over there, and if you feel like you qualify, apply. And I think you'll be glad you did. I know I love working with Rocky Nook, and I think you will too. All right, just a little virtual camera club news here. I seem to be somewhat long-winded today. It's just, there's so many interesting things to talk about. So SizzlePics, let's talk about SizzlePics for a second. Talking about the 5K ultra high definition SizzlePics now. This is in full bloom, in full steam. I broke the news about it a while back. Now it's in full production. And so it's in general release on all orders. So if you place a SizzlePics order, you're getting the 5K ultra high definition. And you can display your best photography at sizes from 18 inches to 6 feet with the resolution and realism that one expects from small screens on handheld phones and iPads. SizzlePics clients say, contrary to expectation, resolution seems to increase as their photos grow larger. And I just think that's really interesting. I tested this where I took an iPhone 4S shot and I made a big SizzlePics from it. And I was impressed at how good it looked. It's almost like by making it bigger as a SizzlePics, the image got better. And I have that hanging on the studio wall. I keep that up just when people ask me, you know, well, can I use my smartphone shots for SizzlePics? And I go, yeah, look at that. Tell me what you think. So what SizzlePics doing right now, they're inviting photographers to compare. If you want to order a print from the other people who print on some kind of metal surface and then order the same image from SizzlePics and then compare them, SizzlePics knows that you're going to like their version better. And in fact, they've never had anyone who did this comparison say that they like the other brand better. They've never had anyone return a SizzlePics on these comparisons. They've always kept the SizzlePics and sent the other one back. If for some reason, if yours is the first that likes the other ones better, then they guarantee their work and you can return your SizzlePics for a full refund. SizzlePix.com. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. A big thanks to Red River Paper for hanging with us now. I was thinking, how long have I been talking about Red River Paper? It's a long time. I remember when I was first introduced to them, and it was way back at a Macworld eons ago when Rick LePage said, "Hey, these guys are great. You should talk to them." And that was the beginning of a long and great friendship. So anyway, I just want to mention their Facebook page. If you use Facebook, you should like their page, mainly because you get stuff. You'll learn stuff, and you have the opportunity for discounts and sometimes even free paper. And it's facebook.com/redriverpaper. They have an entire catalog of fantastic stocks at great prices, and they're really into quality control. What you receive in that Red River Paper box is a high quality product. And you can also get envelopes, sleeves, ink, you name it. You know, if you're a printing enthusiast, then this should be your first stop, Red River Paper. And much thanks to their sponsorship over longer than I can remember. All right, I think that's going to do it for me today. And like I said, lots of good stuff to talk about. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Make sure you come back. Until then, have a fantastic week, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.